You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. For the last few weeks, COVID cases have been on the rise in LA County. Hospitalizations have also been creeping up, but not at the same pace. And deaths remain relatively low. LA County Public Health Director Barbara Ferrer recently warned about those trends. She said if LA continues on that trajectory, it could put a strain on hospitals, triggering a return to indoor masking. But if or when that could happen is still up in the air.
Actual hospital admission rates could increase at a faster rate. Or if case numbers stabilize or decrease in the next 2 weeks, the rate of increase in hospitalizations could be a lot lower.
A return to indoor masking would be a big and unwelcome shift for a lot of folks, but some people have kept the masks on at work or in all public spaces. To help us interpret what's happening and what may be coming, Dr. Kimberly Schreiner is here. She's the Director of Infectious Disease and Prevention at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena. Dr. Schreiner, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
LA County's COVID case numbers have been trending up for a while, but last week they actually fell ever so slightly. I mean, is that good? Obviously, it's good news, but is it too early to tell that if that's a trend?
It might be a little bit too early. It does seem to be bobbing around a little bit up and down, but that's what it normally does when we kind of reach the plateau out in the community. I remember that hospitalizations lag behind about 2 to 3 weeks, but it is encouraging, and I know some of the wastewater analysis that's been going on has also seen a drop in the amount of coronavirus that they're able to isolate. So I'm optimistic.
Would you label these increases as a surge, an uptick? It certainly wasn't like winter, right?
It's not like winter. And the question is, why is it not like winter? Because this particular variant of Omicron is even more infectious than the first Omicron that emerged. So we know it's highly infectious. We know that it's circulating widely in the community, and people are largely unmasked right now. The advantages that we have is it's the summertime, and so people are largely outdoors. Many people have remained masked when they do indoor activities, go to the supermarket or whatever. And of course, the population is reasonably well vaccinated, reasonably well boosted, and also many who haven't vaccinated or boosted or are both have had natural infection. So there's a little bit of a barrier to the virus right now, I think, that's accounting for perhaps the relatively small wave that we're seeing right now. But that could change if the virus mutates or if the circumstances become different.
Last week, Barbara Ferrer was warning that an indoor mask mandate could be triggered in the next few weeks. Do you expect that to happen?
Last week, I would have said yes. This week, if we do see kind of a plateau effect with the virus right now, we might be able to avoid that. We're going to have to see what happens from the Memorial Day fallout. That could increase the cases substantially. But for right now, I think it's reasonable to take a moment and pause before we move to that level of mitigation.
In the past few years, mask mandates, even mask wearing, has become very politicized, obviously. Are you concerned at all if there is a mask mandate implemented in the county?
Well, personally, I always find it a little bit curious. You know, when it rains, we wear a raincoat. When we get into a car, we put on a seatbelt. When we have a surge, we should wear a mask. Are masks unpleasant and sort of alien to our culture? A little bit. They are not harmful. They're very safe, and they will protect you very effectively. And so, you know, it's become a very political thing. And I think people really are just yearning for this sort of normal life that we had before. It will never be what we had before because we've been through this and it's different. And the nice thing about masks is that they're cheap, they're widely available, they're safe, and they protect you from other diseases such as influenza and respiratory syncytial virus. And so it's going to take a while for perhaps it to be kind of ingrained into our normal behavior when we have a surge to do this. And it isn't forever. We'll have a week or two of where we have to wear a mask diligently, and then maybe we have a little respite for a while where we can do our normal activities. And you can do normal activities with the mask. So it is unfortunate, and it is perhaps inconvenient, but it's life-saving, and it's a very simple, inexpensive thing to do.
Well, speaking of normal activities and masking, as the good doctor said, the service industry servers and bartenders and bussers have to deal with unmasked customers all the time, eating and drinking indoors. And even with a potential mask mandate on the horizon, the folks who eat or drink indoors will likely still be able to do so. Obviously, you go to your table, you take the mask off to be able to eat. So how do servers feel about that? And what's the risk facing service workers all over Greater LA? To answer that question, Christy Morales is here. She's a server at an upscale chain restaurant in Burbank. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Steve.
Tell us what it's been like over the last few. I mean, look, we've had the pandemic. Restaurants have closed, did takeout and delivery for a little while. Now everything's back open, obviously. But people walk in, they may have a mask on, but when they get to that table, masks come off, right?
Yeah, and that's pretty much that. I mean, no one keeps their mask on in between bites, in between meals or anything like that. So, yeah, I guess for us servers, what we've been doing is just either keeping the mask on or, you know, starting to feel the pressure to take it off. Like you get a table and somebody will say, oh, you can take the mask off with me. It's fine. Or they are a little more hostile and say, what? I can't understand you. And, you know, you try to, you've adapted, right? And with a mask. And so you speak slowly, enunciated and everything. And it's still kind of a little bit of a tense situation. So you just try to take that with a grain of salt and just do your job. And not to mention that, like, for a lot of servers, at least where I work, our hours are cut to a certain extent so that we cannot qualify for health insurance. So on one end, we're kind of left out in the cold by our employers, but then we are also facing pressure from customers to take our masks off. And so you're just kind of like trying to navigate those two things. But of course, I again, like, I don't think that that, you know, your eating experience is compromised because someone wears a mask.
So what do you do if you get sick?
Well, luckily, recently, I qualified for my husband's insurance. But aside from that, you're kind of just stuck trying to navigate public health care. And you're also not really sure what COVID is going to be like for you. So you're just kind of out of luck there.
Dr. Schreiner, I want to bring you back in. Do you have advice for Christy? I mean, you're a physician. Is there something more that she can be doing to feel safe at work?
Well, I think Christy's statements are really spot on in terms of what the dilemma is, and I totally empathize with the situation. And a few things that could be pointed out. For one thing, obviously, if you have an immunocompromised condition or you don't have health care insurance, or you have an immunocompromised person at home, it really is important that you wear a mask. And I think it's important that the public be aware of that, that if your server is wearing a mask, they're protecting themselves and they're protecting you. And obviously I'm perhaps in the minority, but wearing a mask is a statement saying, I care about you as much as I care about me. And, you know, it's important, I think, that they're very effective at preventing transmission. And as a food server, you're hovering over the food or the cocktail that you're bringing to the table. I feel better if the serving staff is masked up. Then things in their nose don't fall into my food. And I think that might be something you might point out to people.
One thing that's really important that I want to mention, and just so that everyone's aware, and I'm pretty sure you can assume this is happening, but I've had two coworkers with COVID tell our general manager that they had COVID and that they're sick, but they're not sick enough to miss work. And the GM has just let them come into work wearing regular surgical masks, not KN95, nothing like that. And none of us knew. And this is when the mask mandate was on. And, you know, this is like last year. Yeah. So it's just like,
That's not good.
No regard.
Yeah. It is going to have to somehow change in our culture.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on today and talking to us about it. Christy Morales, server at an upscale restaurant in Burbank. Dr. Kimberly Schreiner, the director of infectious disease and prevention over at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Still to come, turns out you can find help in a bookstore and not just in the books. That's yours on GLA on the other side of this.
Thank you. Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. In the West Adams neighborhood, the sign says bookstore, but it's so much more than that. It's a place for help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, how do you
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
At All Power Books, residents in the area come for the books, but they also visit that store to pick up free essentials, such as clothing, services, even food from their community fridge. But even helpers need help. A huge rent increase in building renovations are forcing the owners to move to a smaller location, and the future of the storefront is uncertain. Savannah Boyd is co-founder of All Power Books. Hey, Savannah.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good. I understand you and your partners began all of this during the pandemic by providing mutual aid in encampments. How did you grow from that kind of outreach to a storefront in West Adams?
Well, yeah, we were, you know, pitching tents on sidewalks, distributing food and medicine and COVID tests. And amongst us, you know, we were frustrated with the city's response, and we just knew we had to do something bigger. It's just, I don't know how it happened. It happened really quick. We just were like, I wonder if we can raise enough money. We have enough public support and public trust. And I think within like 2 weeks, we just got it done.
A storefront. So you crowdsourced, you went out, you asked for some help, of course. You have this bookstore called All Power Books, but as I said before, it's more than just books. I mean, you just stated yourself, you started at the encampments and you wanted to do something maybe that city services weren't doing. You provide food and clothing and all kinds of support. I mean, how many services does All Power do, you know, and provide for folks in the community?
Well, our whole entire thing is that whatever anyone needs, we will try our to the best of our ability. You know, we've helped source funds for new cars for people, just basically whatever an individual needs. If they come to us and it's something that's possible that we can do, we sort of take all of our effort and put that towards trying to just source things for people. Yeah, the bookstore portion of All Power Books is probably the smallest portion of what we actually do.
The smallest portion, but you do help fund the services that you provide with the sales of those books, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we are actually all volunteer ran and community supported. We can only do so much because we only have so much. But what's beautiful is knowing that even with how little we all have, the difference that it makes when we all band together is it's crazy, and it's beautiful to see.
I feel like we tell this story over and over again, but the landlord is going up on the rent. I know the building is in some mode of disrepair, right? That they're trying to fix the building up because it's an old, like 100-year-old building. And so the rent is going up. You guys can't necessarily afford that. Tell us what predicament you're in and how you're going to, you know, what kind of uncertain future that you do have.
Okay, yeah, it's a long story, and it's actually way, way, way bigger than All Power Books. Well, we moved into All Power Books, and before we moved in, our landlord said that they were going to do some repairs before we moved in, and obviously that never happened. And so now they have been saying that they were going to evict us so that they can do the repairs and then, you know, obviously jack up the rent and then re-rent it out to somebody else who would be willing to pay that much money. So luckily, because of our relationship with people in the community. Our next door neighbor, a business owner that owns a liquor store, offered a storage space for us to rent. So we rented that to at least have just a spot so we don't have to leave the neighborhood, because we thought about going mobile. We thought about looking into other spaces. So we have that space, but I think with the pressure that, you know, the community's been coming forth, we have even had a grassroots campaign of our unhoused neighbors write in a petition to keep us and everything. So with all that pressure, they said that we could probably stay during construction, but I think we're going to be able to stay. We're hoping that the rent doesn't go up too high, because like I said, we are just supported by donations. But why I say it's bigger than All Power Books is because the West Adams area has been a massive, massive spot in LA for gentrification. It's taking over the entire area. People are getting priced out. A lot of the people that we serve and talk to and are really good friends with now, they are getting priced out as we speak. So we're just really working with LA Tenants Union and a bunch of different other tenants organizations to help fight all of that.
But the bottom line is, y'all are sticking around for a little while, even if it's out of a storage space at the liquor store next door.
Yep, and even if that doesn't work out, we'll be working out of our cars, we'll be working out of our houses. As much as we are also the type of people who need these services, we're all just, I feel like we're just a bunch of young kids that are struggling ourselves, but we won't stop as long as there's a need. We will always be there, which is exciting to know, but it's also exhausting.
Struggling kids, but also folks who are helping the community. I want to thank you, Savannah Boyd, co-founder of All Power Books in West Adams. Savannah, much love to you.
No, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Back at the Greater LA on KCRW, Steve Chiotakis here. KCRW's Young Creators Project has been showcasing some great music and poetry over the last few weeks. This week, it's visual arts. And today, we'll be featuring a couple of young artists who talked with KCRW's art insider, Lindsay Preston Zappas, about their work. You're going to hear from Minnie Lerner of Echo Park, a 16-year-old junior at Polytechnic High School in Pasadena, whom you'll come to know works with some unique media. But first, Ariana Louie is a 16-year-old Chinese-Korean-American artist based in the South Bay. She's a junior at South High School. She loves to incorporate her cultures and experiences into any medium of work, but especially painting. Here's Lindsay.
Ariana, welcome. It's great to have you here with us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So tell us about the piece that you submitted.
So basically, it's a self-portrait of myself. She's like 16 and it's just me looking out, but over top of it is a picture of like 3 or 4 year old Ariana. She's like cut up, but she's like mixed in almost with a current self at 16. So
yeah, I was really drawn to that mixed media process that you're using, where you're putting a photograph over this painting. And can you tell us kind of why you started working in that way, mixing photography and painting?
Well, I wanted to represent the different like time periods of myself and my life so far, and the different types of mediums really represented that the best.
What else does the piece mean to you? Like, why look back at your childhood self and kind of put it over this painting? And it also, I think the cut up part is really interesting, that it's sort of fractured in a way.
Well, actually, it originally was for like a prompt of how you see the world. And so I wanted to do like this reflection of myself, because I think out of a lot of times you kind of like base yourself on like academics or just awards. So I usually like to look about how younger me would see how I'm doing right now and how she would think of how I'm living my life right now. And so that's why I wanted to mix it in, as if almost 3 or 4 year old Ariana is like looking at 16 year old Ariana, and I would think she'd be pretty proud of myself. So that's why I wanted to like fracture, I guess, the piece almost, as she's like always with me and like looking out as I'm looking out, but it's like mixed together.
making art is such a powerful tool to kind of communicate. And I love your piece and kind of what it says about you, but also I think so many people can relate to it. Like I said, is sort of the past and the present coming together in this really interesting way and kind of different sides of ourselves. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for like even looking at that. It means like so much. I mean, KCRW is so big, and I think my mom listens to your show actually. That's how she found out about it.
Oh, awesome. So mom told you, she's like, you got to apply.
Yeah. She was like, you got to say, I heard it on the radio. So you gotta do it. Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much. Ariana is a visual artist, and she joined us today as part of KCRW's Young Creators Project. Minnie Lerner is a 16-year-old lesbian, artist, poet, DJ, curator, copy editor, zinester, postmodernist, and junior at Polytechnic High School in Pasadena. She collects vintage lingerie, and she sometimes makes art with it. Minnie, it's great to have you here with us. Welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Awesome. Well, tell us about the piece that you submitted for KCRW's Young Creators Project and sort of describe what it looks like for people that might not have seen it.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it, the piece is a corset from the late 1920s. It's hanging behind me right now for people who are watching the video. And essentially, I've destroyed different panels of it, ripped out different pieces between the boning, and then restitched some of it with a thread that's sort of a more neon or brighter pink than the pale pink of the corset. And I made it as one of the 15 pieces in my sustained investigation for AP Art this year. It deals with a lot. It's a very heavy piece. When I was making it, I was sort of battling anorexia, and it was a particular moment in that struggle that was a really, really difficult one to push through. Physically, it was hard to make the piece. There were, you know, hours I would spend just like trying to like summon the energy to move my arms enough to make the tears that I needed to and sew the stitches that I needed to. And to be honest, I don't remember most of the making of it. A lot of those pieces are missing, but I remember coming away with something that was alarming, and that made people stop and go like, what's this about? And what are you trying to tell me?
So the art piece itself almost became like a means of communication.
Yeah, definitely. And the nature of the disorder is such that anorexics tend to hide so much. There was so much that I was really burying so deep and that so few people knew. And I think this piece really spoke volumes.
It's like, it's so amazing just the power of art, right? And like these objects that just become these tools for communication, but also such kind of pieces of ourselves and kind of, you know, how we can really show ourselves to the world in ways that we might not fully even understand how to communicate. It's really powerful. And I felt like that came across so well in this piece. It had so much emotion to it. Can you describe what about vintage lingerie and like corsets in particular that you're drawn to and why you wanted to use this corset as a canvas for the piece?
My sustained investigation really started as an exploration of like teenage girlhood and then womanhood and different sort of components and aspects of a femininity that's kind of transitional. So I guess, yeah, I've always been sort of drawn to like the hyperfemininity of things like corsets and slip dresses. And there's a vintage fur coat hanging above my head right now. Yeah.
Amazing. And then how kind of powerful to see that also crumbling and ripped apart. I mean, I think there's a really poignant message there that is really powerful. Thanks so much for joining us, Minnie. It was great chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
16-year-olds Minnie Lerner of Echo Park and Ariana Louie, who lives in the South Bay, part of KCRW's Young Creators Project. Check out their work, by the way, at kcrw.com/youngcreators. And while you're at the website, check us out. Ask questions, share thoughts, even subscribe to the podcast at kcrw.com/GLA. Tomorrow, the election, winners and losers and those in political purgatory as the numbers come in, which reminds me to ask you, please go vote. You have until 8:00 this evening. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludman, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Christine Comito, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.